The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hey, Leather.
Hey, Gene.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm glad you knew who it was already. I didn't even announce myself.
What's the weather like today?
Icy cold.
Oh, yeah. Would you believe I'm in Northern California and it's 30 frickin' degrees?
Wow.
Everything is freezing. The sun is out and it's freezing. I mean, I personally like it, but how you been, Gene? Good to hear from you again.
Good, yeah. I mean, it's been a year or so, but glad to hear you
still. Yeah.
Glad to hear you actually got back together with Dave.
I know. Isn't that bizarre? If you would have told me that when we talked last year with this Sledge Leather project, I would have been like, yeah, I don't think so. But, you know, isn't that the way life is? It goes around full circle.
So are you still going to do something else with Sandy? You still have the second album? Or?
I don't know. You know, everything's really up in the air. You know, it's all indie. We did it ourselves. So, you know, I don't really know. We actually did just do a, and I feel bad that I don't know more about it, but there was a band in Italy, Officiana Strana, something like that, and someone in the band passed away. I don't know how recently it was, but they were a revered band in Italy, so they kind of reached out to all of us. I know Veronica's on it, Benedictum,
right,
and a couple other bands from this country, and we did their songs as a tribute, so we just completed that, so that should be out, but you know, there's not a lot going on for us at this point, no.
Well, we've already discussed the weather, and your sound's good.
The most important stuff, yeah.
All right, so I guess if you're ready, we can get rolling.
Anytime, yeah.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, a return engagement with powerhouse vocalist Levy Leone of Chastain on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema, your source for music and film that matter. Cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight, a welcome return engagement from perhaps the greatest of all female metal singers, legendary powerhouse Levy Leone. As frontwoman for Chastain on no less than five records between 1985 and 1991, her dramatic Dio-inspired pipes both complemented and drew some much-deserved attention to David T. Chastain's darkly melodic neoclassical guitar work, resulting in what many insiders agree may be five of the greatest metal records ever recorded. After a staggering two-decade absence from music, and in honor of her late mentor, the great Ronnie James Dio, Leather's reunited with legendary guitarists and revitalized them from a long flirtation with blues rock to deliver an album very much in the classic Chastain mode. Join us tonight as we speak to the one and only Levy Leone, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea how back inside the pocket they're playing, here's Leather and Chastain off the new record, Surrender to No One, digging in their heels and drawing a line in the sand, because it's time to stand and fight.
Tonight, we're talking music, and we have with us a very welcome return engagement. We're talking about one of the greatest, perhaps the greatest, female vocalist in metal, period. With her gruff and aggressive yet soaring vocals, she mixes a punky take-no-prisoners approach, quite suited to her chosen nom de guerre, with proper, even melodic vocal technique, something you're unlikely to find anywhere else in the scene, even to this day. After returning from a 20-year retirement from the music scene last year for the Sledge Leather Project, she's now found her way back to the band that burned to fame back in the glory days of metal, revitalizing both parties into a comeback album nearly as powerful as the day they parted ways. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce once again one of my personal favorite vocalists and a true legend in metal circles, Miss Leather Leone. Leather, welcome back.
Wow, what an intro that was. Thank you and good night. I mean, thank you. That was amazing. And I'm so glad to be back here. Thanks for the interest. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thanks.
Last year, when I had you on the show, we talked a lot about your influences, the early days, your time with Rude Girl and the various Sandy Sledge projects, and your relationship to Ronnie James Dio and how that brought you back to the music scene after two full decades away. So this time I'm going to focus more on your work with Chastain. So let's take this back a bit. Throughout the entire career of Chastain, there was a lot of fiddling back and forth for performances recorded in different studios by different engineers and crews, cross-country, and all mixed together for a final product. Now, this is obviously kind of commonplace in the digital era, but at the time it represented a real oddity and talking point back in the analog days.
Yeah, it did, now that I look back too, yeah.
Mystery of Illusion came out on Mike Vranny's Shredder label Shrapnel and was produced by Peter Marino at Prairie Sun Studios, which is also the studio of Racer X and Phantom Blue. So
yes.
Were you guys all together for that one?
Yes, we were all together. I know, it's really true, you're right, and the days of all sitting in a studio together now are over. Yeah, everybody came out here, and of course, this is my hometown. Prairie Sun is just up the street from me, so we all came and stayed out there. It's a wonderful studio, and there's facilities to stay. Yeah, so I would say we were probably up here for 7 days, and I would go back and forth every day, and Varney was there. And it's great, but we were one big happy family, eating cheap old SpaghettiOs at night and then recording all day. And everybody was in there at that point. Trauma was in and out with Cliff Burton. I mean, there were a lot of bands in there at the time.
Right.
Yeah, it's a wonderful studio. It's actually still hanging in there.
This was a really strong album right out of the gate, particularly in terms of the ballad Endlessly. And an item of interest for folks unfamiliar with Chastain is that the drummer on this release was a certain Fred Curry. So,
a certain little Fred Curry, yeah.
So how did that work out? Did Mike pull that together, or was that David and you?
Yeah, Mike pulled that together. You have to understand, Mike Varney, even back then, knew everybody, and he would just scout out talent. I mean, he picked all of us up when we were little kids. He just knew. And he would throw us all together. I actually ran into Fred last year down in L.A. I was at some store, and someone said to me, hey, you know, Fred Corey's studio is right around the corner. So, of course, I went and helped myself. And he was saying that we were actually giving him grief for when he went to tour with Ozzy or something, like he did even before Cinderella. I think he did the Just Eric, and then he toured with Ozzy. He goes, you guys were all, like, really pissed at me. And I'm like, really? We just all hung out together. You know, we'd be in the game room until it was our time. I mean, it was a really, really fun time, but we literally, Varney flew us all out, and we all stayed up there.
How did that work? I mean, I know that guitarists, like I'm assuming David did, would send him demos just because, you know, he was known as being the Shredder guy. But did you send him a demo? Is that how that worked?
Yes. Everybody? When I was in Rude Girl, Mike Varney came and his wife Kathy became really good friends of mine. And when Rude Girl fell through, he had already been dealing with Chastain. And I guess that Chastain had heard some other music that Varney had with a female front. And Chastain was interested in doing that. God bless him. I don't know why. And Varney said to him, hey, if you think you want to go the female front, send me some stuff, and I'm going to send you this woman back. He sent Mystery of Illusion, Winds of Change, and I think maybe Endlessly. And I'm going to date myself, but back then, you'd go into a little studio, you'd have your little four-track, you'd sing into it. And yeah, and Varney just sent him the tapes, and that was it. And
wow.
He was like, okay.
So this was right from the beginning, David knew he wanted a female vocalist, huh?
Yeah, I guess he had expressed it to Varney, and someone should ask him about that, because it certainly, again, he protected me from all that stuff back then. But
yep.
The stories that I hear now, I guess it just was not an easy thing to be a female front back then. But, you know, me, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed getting up there in front of all the guys and saying, hey, can I have that microphone, please? So, yeah, I do really wonder where that came from.
Yeah, because I was really wondering about that, because at the time, like you're saying, it was kind of unique. And I can thank you guys on one hand because, you know, you guys are the ones that, first off, knocked me into being a metalhead as opposed to just dabbling.
All right.
And secondly, as I mentioned in an album review for the new album, The Wicked Are Restless. That was actually one of the first songs I learned to play on the guitar.
Seriously? Na-na-na-na-na-na. Yeah. And somebody actually just sent that to me and sent me the YouTube thing. And you know, you make this music and then you forget about it. But that record had some really good songs on it. Seventh of Never, Nevermore, Wicked Are Restless. Yeah, it's a good record.
But on the negative end was, it may also be your fault why our band never quite got out of the demo stage, because I was always looking for a female vocalist, which at the time
were you?
Was really hard. Yes, seriously.
Wow.
That was part of the problem why we couldn't get out.
You know, as you say that to me, I can remember, I always had this conversation with people, when Chastain and I used to be on the road, the women were out there. But I don't know, I guess it just didn't take off. But I do remember seeing female singers, like local female singers that would open up shows and stuff for us. So they were out there.
Right. But anyway, that was just a personal thing.
And you're still looking. There's tons of them now. Pick one.
Right. Now it's easy. But
yeah.
What was interesting about this thing is, while all indications would point to Chastain being a little more than a studio band, I understand that even back then you guys did do live shows, and somewhere along the line, from what you mentioned last time, at least a bit of domestic and even European touring?
We did. I mean, we went around the country once or twice a year. We did go to France and ended up being a total nightmare, but we did play a couple of shows, one in Paris and one, I don't know, somewhere in the hills of France. And then we just stayed in the country. I do believe, no, I don't even, I think him and Kate did European press, but I don't think they ever played over there. But, oh, my God, we toured the country all the time, and we were lucky enough to, since Chastain was based in the Ohio area at that time, the Dayton Arena would, obviously, I don't know, David knew a promoter or something. When they needed bands, they would call when they needed bands with a local draw. So we got to open up for Alice Cooper. We got to open a Kiss show. But, yeah, we played out all the time. I mean, they just flew me out. I was the only one that had to relocate, and I certainly had no problem jumping out of a plane. But I would say I was probably home for 2 months, and then I'd leave for 2 months. I mean, we did that for years, yeah.
So you were the only one? Because I thought Fred was out in L.A., and Ken Mary must have been out there, too.
And, well, you know, that is true. The drummers were always different. We kind of always did have a different drummer. God, I know we used Les Sharp for a while. I don't know if we ever actually played live with Ken Mary. Fred Corey we never played live with, but it was interesting. When we would play a city where Cinderella was, you know, he would come down from his arena show and he would sit in this little club. But we did always kind of grab a different drummer. That's, yeah, very observant of you. Yeah, it was kind of me, David, Mike. And then, but I must tell you, as the years went on, every year we had a different touring band. Yeah. Which was obviously really exciting. I thought it made for great shows, you know?
Well, sure, it brings a new energy to it, so as long as the guys know their stuff.
Yeah.
Ruler of the Wasteland was, if anything, an even darker album, and also on Shrapnel. Now, this one was produced by both Steve Fontana, who recorded and mixed but didn't produce last time, and David Chastain, once again at Prairie Sun. So, once again, were you guys all in the same studio together for the recording?
Yes. Let me think. Ruler. Yeah, I think we were all together in the studio again. Yeah, oh my God, this is like, I can't even remember last year. But I think we were all together for that one, too. Yes, I think that we were. And then, and you know also what it was. We were always on the road, so we were kind of doing sessions in between. I can remember that we would play all weekend. I'd be staying in Ohio somewhere, and then I would go record at night. So we would do bits and pieces in between being on the road. That's what we would do. But I do think, Ruler, that we were all together. I mean, David's going to listen to this and then correct me. But I think, again, we were all together up in Cantati doing Ruler of the Wasteland. And then 7th and on, then it changed. Then we would just do bits and pieces when we were on the road. Everyone would do their parts, and then I would come together. Of course, I would always do my vocals with David. And, of course, for me, that was the best time. You know, for me to go into a studio at midnight was perfect. And I can remember that, again, the days we weren't playing, that Chastain and I would just do all these demos that I would sing in his bathroom. I mean, for hours. And we would work it out, and then we'd go in the studio at night. Yeah, that's how we did it.
Wow. So it's still being recorded. Just any old local studio you can jump into.
Yeah. I can picture the guy in the studio, but it was somewhere in Cincinnati where we would go in the middle of the night, yeah.
Wow. So one thing about the Shrapnel albums is they came with some really nice artwork.
You think that's nice artwork?
Well, you know, I'm not positive who was responsible for that one on Mystery of Illusion. That was very Boris Vallejo, Frank.
You know, Lovato. I'm not either. And everybody talks about the woman with no shirt. I don't know who did that either, but I can always remember, even back then, I don't know how to say this, but I really just do music. That's all I'm interested in, unless the cover is like, you know, a shredded animal. I mean, I don't care. But I used to look at those covers and go, dude, what are you doing? Especially anyone who knows me knows, keep your damn clothes on. That's my thing. When I saw that thing on Mystery of Illusion, I'm going, what are you doing? I mean, I was horrified by them, always. I mean, who drew that little Chastain man on Ruler of the Wasteland? Oh, my God, I don't know who did those. But so many people tell me that's why they bought the records back then, because you would see that crazy cover and you would buy it. Because there were no pictures on Mystery of Illusion, right? Were there pictures on Ruler of us?
Yes, I think there were on the back, yeah.
Yeah.
But on Mystery.
But, yeah, I mean, the woman with the big boobs, I mean, really? God.
But, you know, like you said, that's why you caught your eye. You're looking through the store. I'm like, hey, what the hell
is this? And the big Black Knight with the, oh, that was so bad.
I
appreciate them now, though, you know.
So it really seemed like you guys were going from strength to strength here. I mean, Ruler, Fighting to Stay Alive, There Will Be Justice. These are the kind of songs most metal bands can only dream of recording, and they're all there on one album.
Really? God, I mean, thanks. And he also reminds me that I guess Ruler of the Wasteland, when it came out, really was really taking off. And would you believe I wouldn't tour off that record?
Really?
He keeps throwing this in my face when I have arguments with him every day because he's really not that into touring any longer. And we're getting offered a lot of festival slots, and he's not interested in leaving the country.
Right.
And he's like, well, when people bring it up, he calls me Miss Lather, when people bring it up, Miss Lather, you just remind them, yeah, I didn't want to tour Rule of the Wasteland. I guess it was all over Tanny. See, and I was just like, I want to stay home.
Wow.
I want to be with my boyfriend. Shoot.
And, you know, last time you had mentioned you guys played New York, and that just pisses me off because I never knew. And I was always waiting, like, you know, these guys, they're recording from all over the country. I'm never going to see them live. And
yeah, we played. Does L'Amour still exist?
I don't think it exists anymore, but yeah.
L'Amour, yeah. Oh, God, we used to play there. And, yeah, we were in New York a lot. You know, like I said, we did a big circle around the country.
Wow. Like I said,
I'm so sorry. We were there at least twice a year, probably twice a year.
It sticks to my craw because I never knew.
Well, how old were you, 12?
I'm not.
Yeah, I understand. Because I was 12, so you had to be close to it, yeah.
Right, exactly. After this, Chastain broke away from Barney to David's own Leviathan Records, which for the most part is where the Chastain's catalogs resided ever since. So do you know the reason behind the move?
Probably Chastain likes to do everything himself. He obviously wanted to have all the finances come back into the band.
Right.
He's still like that. He doesn't see why anybody else should be getting any of the money. And I think he, probably not so much anymore, but he enjoyed doing all of it. He wanted control. He's always wanted control in a good way. It's like, we're the ones making the music. We should be collecting all the funds. I'm not going to pay somebody else to, you know, take care of our talent. So
exactly.
He had a friend, Steve McClure, back in the day, and they were business partners, and that's how it started. Of course, again, as we say now, you know, he's probably ready to shoot himself in the head because he's so not interested in all this business any longer. But back then, you certainly, yeah, you wanted your own control.
Makes sense. You're right. Because, you know, why should you be paying a bunch of middlemen?
I mean, the shrapnel deals, it was frightening what you had to do to make a record back then. Frightening what they took from you. Sorry, Mike.
No, but even beyond that, I mean, I always tell people this because nowadays kids can basically just throw something together in their, you know, their apartment, basically, you know, mix it there on, like, you know, SoundForge or something, and then put it out on the internet. Whereas back then,
I've done demos on GarageBand that sound better than the First Ledge of Leather. I think the demos sounded better than what got put on the CD. I mean, it's amazing if you get someone who knows what they're doing, which I am not. But yeah, they can do whatever they want now,
which is
good and bad. It goes both ways.
Right. Well, the bad thing about that is back then, you know, you really had to break your ass. It was impossible. You were out there, you were touring, you were doing demos, you were shopping them from hand to mouth.
That was fun. That was fun. Now you can't. Now you can't do it anymore. I mean, there's no clubs. You have to pay to play. I mean, I was talking to managers a little while ago saying, what do kids have to do these days? Get 30,000 people on Facebook? I mean, how do you get out there? You know, but there are still kids that will go in a van and play for nothing. And I'm totally with that, yeah.
But the good thing about it, though, on the positive side, was that, you know, because you had to go through this battery of A&R people and whoever else, somebody had to shine to you, and then they would say, well, we already got five bands that sound like this, so you would get almost like the cream of the crop. I mean, sometimes it was who you knew and whatever else, but nine times out of ten, you were kind of winnowing off the also-rans, whereas now it's like, you know, you have 47 bands that sound like whatever, Immortal, or, you know, the band that was out 5 years ago.
I know.
So
it's really true. Well, that's what they do, right? They go to whoever was successful.
Right.
I mean, I think I've heard about three Lizzie, the Hellstorm chicks, three bands that sound just like her in the past week.
Right,
on
exactly.
Octane. Yeah.
And that's a big difference. So, you know, on the positive end, at least, you know, we got more quality people, even though it was a smaller group.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Production-wise, we get another melange here. With the drums and mixing were handled by Terry Date, but the rest was recorded by Dale Smith, and then it was produced by David. And this is the case for both Seventh and Never and Voice of the Cult. So now it's in his home studio, basically. He's handling the whole deal. Why was it still
He's handling the whole deal. I call him Captain David, yeah.
But why was it still going back and forth? With, like, okay, here's the drums over here, the mixing's there, the recording's here, and then Dave's producing it.
Well, you know, we've never lived in the same town, anybody, you know?
Okay, so it's still that. Okay.
Yeah, it's still that. We want to work together, and again, through technology, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, Chastain's in touch with the drummers and guitar players from all over the world. They press a button, and there it is. And again, it's financially viable, you know, to fly everybody out and have rehearsal time.
Right.
I actually don't enjoy it. I would much rather, I would have loved to meet Stan and been hanging out in a room with him and Mike all day, but it's just not like that any longer.
I think I said it all between our last interview and my review of the new album on the website, but to this
this day, the five Chastain albums and your solo record Shockwave stand out as some of the best metal records ever recorded, with Seventh and Never holding a particular place of honor. So what was going on behind the scenes to bring about a record like that?
Well, we were just hungry. I wanted to be opening for Metallica. I was angry. But no, I mean, David was just writing like a crazy man back then, which he still does. But, I mean, I don't know. He just had a plethora of material. And we were just, you know, on the road all the time. And, you know, you just became creative. I mean, God, I really miss it as I talk about it. It was just about putting out records, which he likes to do. As he says, he can write 100 songs in a day. Not necessarily good songs, but he can write them. So. You know, I mean, I was on the warpath. I just, you know, I wanted to break so badly. I wanted to be on a big tour. And, you know, I was always trying to be Ronnie James Dio. And,
right.
And I was just having the time of my life. I mean, I went from Rude Girl, this little garage band here, to working with David Chastain. I walked into this club, my first show with him called Bogart's, to 1,700 screaming maniacs.
Wow.
I mean, it was just so inspirational. That was my training ground. He just made me better. I was this green little singer, right. And all of a sudden I'm in a studio with David Chastain. I mean, you know, it was show up or shut up, you know, so I really had to work hard. And I mean, that's really where I learned my chops.
So how bad did the stage fright hit you getting out there in front of that many fans in your first show?
Oh, my God, never. I could just sit there and do nothing. The band that I was in before, the Rude Girl, it was more of a nerve crazy thing because, you know, we weren't very good and the guitar player would always like become unplugged. And I mean, we were just a bunch of crazy people. But with Chastain, there was just a sense of confidence. I knew the band was going to be fine, so it was just me doing my job. Now, stage fright doesn't happen for me. Like I said, I'll just stand there for 2 hours and let you throw stuff at me. I don't care.
So you're like me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an Italian thing, I don't know.
But, you know, Chastain had already had these fans. I didn't have to work very hard for them,
right.
Not in that part of the world. I mean, they just opened their arms to me. But, yeah, I don't get nervous on stage at all. You usually have to pull me off, like any other band member. I mean, you just, that's where you feel at home.
Right, you got to be histrionic in the first place to get out there and do this.
Yeah, totally. That's a good way to put it.
I can't even name off tracks here. I mean, the entire album is intense from start to finish. I mean, like I said, The Wicked or Restless is one of the first songs I learned when I picked up the guitar during the same year.
Yeah, that's great.
Voice of the Cult was a bit of a shift. It was a little slower, more reflective and contemplative. And I know you co-wrote a few tracks on this one as well. So tell us about that.
I did, and I listened to Voice of the Cult. Oh, it just makes me cringe. I sang that a lot differently. My voice at that point was really, really strong. So I think it was different. Yeah, it was more of a clean approach. And I think the whole record was cleaner, and I don't think it was so angry. It was more of a leadership record. And that one definitely was recorded in and out of touring. I remember I just got a flashback of trying to do those harmonies in the middle of the night and throwing coffee at the glass window at Chastain because I always get so upset with them. But yeah, it was different, and it was how he was feeling at that time. And Chastain never said to me or to anyone, I'm not interested in your material. It was never like that. I am not a prolific songwriter. I certainly wasn't back then. I mean, I met him, and he's like, hi, I have these 7 records. Let's go. And I loved his writing. You know, I loved his writing. And again, I was very green. I kind of just went in there and kind of stayed really safe. And then I just started, you know, writing lyrics and giving them to him. And a week later, he would say, okay, what do you think of this? So it's something. And again, I think it comes with hanging out with people more and knowing people more. So I think it's a natural progression.
And this one's going to put you on the spot. Speaking of which, Share Yourself With Me was a pretty intense exploration of rough sex, if not S&M. And
oh, totally. Oh, my God. Yeah, that was a total horny song. Totally.
Exactly. And it's really interesting to hear it come from a pen of a lady. I mean,
come on, dude. We're just as horny. Yeah, that was, of course, I would never name names, but that was someone that had been working with us at the time who was a kind of Ohio. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a total young, horny dude. Obviously, that I couldn't get a piece of, so I had to write it down.
Like I said, you know, I wish my wife wrote songs like that to me. That's all I can say.
You know, and it was funny. I thought when that came, well, I don't really think it was a very good song, but when it came out, I thought more people would kind of say something about it, but they never really did. Now they seem to. Yeah, that's a total beat-off tune for sure. Yeah.
I picked up.
Sorry, Mom, I love you. Yeah.
I picked up right away when I first heard that. I'm like, oh, my God. Wow.
What is wrong with this woman?
Well,
good
no,
job.
No, it, was just like, it came from Leather. Like, okay.
Yeah.
When can I meet this woman?
Yeah, we could never do that one live. I'm like, come on.
But the title track on that one is simply amazing. I mean, he took the old Randy Rhoads double and triple track leads. They're real extreme. It was like an Army League guitar launch. I think I heard at the time that he'd recorded something like 20 tracks for that intro.
Oh, my God. Yeah, just amazing. Well, you have to realize when we were on the road and we would be at home, he used to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning practicing to Paganini. I mean, I got turned on to so much of that type music back in the day. Oh, God, those fingers. I mean, I couldn't even watch them. But, yeah, he used to do layer and layer and layer and layer.
Now, 4 albums in, you make your third label jump, this time to Roadrunner. Now, I understand from what we discussed last time that while you did get more high-profile exposure, including the only video you ever recorded, the situation with the label may not have been the best all around for you guys?
Yeah, I'm surprised that Chastain even did that. But then again, I was never into the business side of it. But and you have to understand, they were not a big label back then. I mean, now they're huge. Yeah, I'm not real. I can just remember when the record was mixed and we sent it to them, and Chastain was upset because back then, what, Sepultura had just come out, and they were trying to make everything sound like that. So they went and they remixed the record and blah. I don't really know. We certainly got way more exposure. I mean, MTV, and I couldn't even walk down the street at that point. It was kind of exciting, but I don't really know how well it did as far as selling. But yeah, I mean, it was the power of MTV, but the shows weren't getting bigger. It was actually kind of a disappointment. You know, I think, and again, people are obviously like, what happened to you and Chastain? There was no big implosion. There was no, you know, I don't want to do this music anymore. It just kind of happened for itself. You know, like I said, the shows were getting smaller. People were spending their $20 to go see Metallica, not to see us. But yeah, the video was extremely exciting. It made me think we were on the road, and it was like, oh my God, Headbangers Ball, they're going to premiere the video tonight. So we're all in the hotel room, you know, we're all having beers. And it comes on, and they had Chastain spelled wrong. And I can just remember going, looking at him, going, oh God, I don't think this is a good sign.
Sadly, I think I remember that too.
You remember that?
Yeah.
They had T-I-A-N, which everybody always used to do.
I'm sitting there watching with my drummer. I'm like, they spelled his freaking name wrong.
I mean, I think he just, like, shook his head and left the room, and then we, like, didn't see him for the next 2 days. Like I said, I can just remember being extremely frustrated at that point. I wasn't that crazy about the record. You know, I had just reached this vocal place. I just think I started singing everything clean then, and I was like, oh, God, I don't like it. And also, we didn't really have big budgets, so we were always rushed. It's like, okay, you have 12 hours to do these vocals. So it was disappointing in that aspect. I wanted to do some big major tour. But then again, now that I understand more, I mean, David, that's never been his goal. So, you know, I'm sure he turned down some things that didn't happen. So it was just kind of the end of the chapter, I believe.
This kind of taps into some of the stuff you're already saying, but for those who dare represent something of a major change with a very different sound, a more open production style, making use of space and clarity, and toning down the trademark reverb dramatically. And you were writing a lot more. You know, you had I Am the Rain, and the title track really stood out.
Yeah, I Am the Rain. I had a friend of mine that was making fun of the end of it. I'm the rain, the rain, the rain, the rain, the rain. Going, really? But yeah, I did write a lot more, but that is definitely not one of my favorite records. You know, and again, you grow, you change, but vocally, I would really like to do all those tracks again. But, you know, people really like those records. Whenever I play anywhere, people want to hear Voice of the Cult. People want to hear For Those Who Dare. So as Chastain says, those are our big radio hits. But, you know, I mean, God bless all of you that listen to it. I mean, it's a blessing, you know.
And on the production end, it was still produced by David, but it was mixed by John Cunaberti back at Prairie Sun again. But most significantly, the backbeat of the band had changed from Mike Skimmerhorn and Ken Mary to David Harbour and Jean-Luc Ybert.
Oh, my God, they were so much fun. And they were so much younger, and they just brought in kind of this, oh, God, they were so much fun. You know, they went on to play with King Diamond for years.
Right.
But that was probably my favorite band. Yeah, and it was a different sound. I mean, David, you know, the bass player came from this, God, this just wild, trained, a lot like David Chastain, kind of a neoclassical sound. And, oh, my God, he was just so much fun. And of course, the drummer was prettier than any woman I'd ever met, John Luke, who I ran into a couple years ago, who's still beautiful. But that was really, really a lot of fun. The energy from that band, I think we were just really friends on that tour. Me, David, and John just had so much fun running around the country.
But in terms of the recording, it was still split again, because I think those two recorded their parts at Prairie Sun. The rest of you guys recorded somewhere else.
That's right. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we haven't been together. You know, like I said, I'm obviously with David, but after Ruler of the Wasteland, it's always been different. It's always been, I think, the way people record now. Yeah, you just send tracks over and fix them.
Fred Curry went on to higher profile gig with Cinderella, and Ken Mary was more or less a session guy working with Fifth Angel and Pearl Terry around that time. But what happened with Mike Skimmerhorn? Because I thought that he and David were school chums or something. I know they both played together.
Well, they are, but he actually, what's the name of his band? The Mighty Swine? They still do really well in the Ohio area. They have some video on YouTube that's amazing. They're kind of like they're definitely a rock band. They're just a raw rock band. But he's still working musically, big time. And he's a lot like me, where, you know, he has his bag packed, and he's sitting by the front door waiting for the bus to come. So we're just like, you know, chewing at Jeff Stan's toes every day. But no, he's still working musically in the Ohio area. Yeah.
Okay, because, yeah, I know they were together in Spike before Jeff Stan, and then they were in CJFS.
Right, oh, yeah, they've been.
I was like, what happened? Why'd you switch up the backing band?
Yeah.
You mentioned that your solo record, Shockwaves, was part and parcel of the Roadrunner deal, but that it was underpromoted?
Oh, God, that was, and it's funny, I am still friends with Monty Connor. I adore him. He won't sign me, but, you know, he helps me out a lot. He's at Nuclear Blast now. But, you know, and I've told him this, they just wanted Chastain. I'm not quite sure why, but they really wanted the next Chastain record. So I know David did it as a deal. They were like, okay, well, let's rope them in by giving Leather this opportunity. Yeah, they didn't do anything with the record, nothing at all. I mean, they probably printed up 500 copies. Very little press. I mean, right. It was I can't even think of the term, but it was all part of the deal to suck us in. And,
wow.
But, I mean, I'm glad for it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it was particularly much different than a Chastain record, except
yeah.
It was all my melodic ideas. I think I sang a little, and, you know, people that hear this will think I'm crazy, but I think the way I sing with Chastain and the way I sang on that record, it's just different. It's just a different type thing. It's not so neoclassical. It's more straight ahead. But I really like that record. There's some songs that I really, really like on that.
It's an unusual album that it features all of the For Those Who Dare or Chastain, except for David, who was replaced by Michael Harris on guitars.
They were cheap. They were cheap. Yeah. except Michael Harris, right? Yeah.
Right. And then the album was produced by David, who recorded Mike's guitars at Leviathan. So
totally. Well, dude, it's all about being financially viable. Yeah, it was just something that came up really quickly. And Chastain says it to me like this. He said, I can't even imitate. He was like, Miss Lather, you were so upset that you weren't breaking as big as Doro that you just wanted to put out your own music. So I said, okay, let's put out your own music. I really don't remember it that way, but it was just an opportunity. I went through tons and tons and tons of music. I had people sending me music, and I can remember I was staying with the lighting man at that time, who I'm recently back in touch with, Ron Coy, who I adore. And I would just sit in his apartment every day in front of the stereo, and I just wrote all that stuff. So it was pretty fast, but I think it's a metal record. And
I love it.
So do I. Something in This Life is like my favorite song ever, and I've always had a problem, not a problem, but I hate the whole gender issue,
right.
Especially that back then. It's obviously the top 10 girls, blah, 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 and it's like, oh, my God, you're such a great female singer. Just tell me I'm a good singer. It doesn't
right.
matter what I have in between my legs. And when Something in This Life, when that hit, I finally got reviews that said this person is a metal singer. It finally got away from the girl thing, and they said, but then they had to, you know, put in there that he sounded like a guy. I mean, that still bothers me so much to this day.
Yeah, I actually remember, because when I had you on last time, that was one song that you requested, because I said I want to do something off Shockwaves. You said I want to do something
yeah.
in His Life, so we played that.
Well, that's you know, that's from a conversation that I had with Ronnie James Dio, and that's what he said to me. So I mean, that was a really easy song to write.
Production wise, once again, it's another multi-location affair with vocals and drums recorded and mixed by Steve Fontana at Prairie Sun, Dale Smith recording bass and acoustic at a third studio. I mean, geez.
I know, you're making me think, where did I do the vocals on that? Did I do those in Ohio?
I think I did. I think so, yeah.
That was probably the, yeah.
Oh, no, you did.
You know, sometimes when
vocals
I talk
and
to
drums,
people.
The vocals and the drums were at Prairie Sun.
Yeah,
that's what the album
said. Wow. Oh, no, thank you, Gene. And for anyone who's listening, I'm not really that brain dead. It was a crazy whirlwind back then. But that's right, because that was when the earthquake happened here. I was sitting in a four-way stop, and there was a big rumble, and I'm like, damn, somebody hit my car. But that's when the big earthquake, or 1991, happened, and everything was on fire in the city, but I could still get up to Prairie Sun. That's right. That was the earthquake record. Okay.
Wow. So it was during the earthquake you're recording?
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool. But, yeah, thanks for that memory. Yeah, that was earthquake.
Wow.
Big earthquake, yeah.
And, you know, interesting, though, even though it's your solo album, it seemed like you wrote about the same amount as you did on For Those Who Dare. For a portion, it was David again.
Oh, and then, of course, there's the song that Shelton wrote.
Right.
Mark Shelton had written.
Exactly.
I don't know if it was particularly for me, but we changed that song up a lot. It had been a really slower song. But yeah. That record was great. Catastrophic Heaven, that was a fun record.
Finally, we come to the new album. You know, last year, after a good 20-year retirement from the industry, you got back together with your old brew girl, Malibu Barbie bandmate Sandy Sledge, for the Sledge Leather Project. And I understand that was pretty much due to the passing of your mentor, Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah.
While I certainly love the album, and I hope you get to put out another with Sandy like we were talking about before, I think a lot of us were secretly hoping you'd find a way to get back together with David and kickstart him from that more bluesy grunge rock thing he was doing recently to, you know, full-on Leather Leone-fronted Chastain mode. And you did.
Yeah, Yeah, for sure. They had a lot to do with it. You know, I mean, the people, I mean, I'd been gone a really long time, and people were still calling him and saying, hey, do you guys want to come and play in Mexico? And I'd be like, are you kidding me? So, you know, all of you people are just, I mean, you wanted to hear more. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I had to make sure that I could still do it. As I told you back in the Sledge Letter Project time, I mean, I had to be able to do it. And when I started talking to Chastain about doing new music, I got to tell you, I don't get nervous going on stage, but I got a little nervous because Chastain material has always been way more challenging for me to sing.
Right.
I'm like, you know, with the Sledge Letter thing, it was kind of just a straight ahead, slower tempo stuff. So I was a little nervous to go back and sing and be in a studio with him, I got to tell you.
But it worked out, obviously.
Yes, it worked out after many throwing things. I'm such a drama queen in the studio. And again, he knows what I can do, and he doesn't put up with anything less. You know, he's like, we do it this way, we do it right, or we change it. And that's all you have to tell me, because I'm not going to change the original melody. So it's really hard work. But, well, I mean, yeah, I think it turned out okay.
You see, you're lucky you got a guy that you're working with who's been with you before and knows how that is, because my wife does not understand the whole Italian thing. Because when she said you're throwing things, I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. You know, it's a drama. Obviously, we should do like a reality show, you know. Because, it's all about ego. I mean, your ego gets crushed. And, you know, I mean, because I really get frustrated because, of course, I'm older now. My voice has changed. As I've said 100 times, my balls have finally dropped. I could never sing in these lower registers when I was young and I wanted to. Now I can.
Right.
And I never, you know, you're talking about these old records. Oh, my God, the keys in those old records. I mean, my voice to me was just so screechy and so annoying and so full of vibrato. I'm so glad that I can now get away from that. It wasn't a conscious effort to write differently, but, you know, it's just the way it comes out. I'm much more happier singing the way I do now.
So here we are, a full 2 decades on from the last Chastain album you did, and you, David, and Mike Skimmerhorn are back together at last and managed to deliver something that's not all that far removed from where you left off. In fact, it harkens back more to the first 4 albums than the Roadrunner ones, which is doubly impressive.
Good. You think that's great. I was wondering how people were going to... I think some of it is totally classic Chastain, and then there's stuff that, you know, with the drummer Steen, oh my God, he brought such a modern feel to it.
Right.
But, I mean, we discussed that because there were a lot of things that David was writing that I fell in love with, but then as I would listen to it, it's like, you know, we can't come out all of a sudden and be a thrash band or be a rock band. I mean, you know,
right.
You have to stay true to it. So I'm hoping that we found that middle ground.
Yeah, definitely. So the biggest question is, how did you, David, Mike, which is essentially the entire classic Chastain lineup, get back together for this album?
Well, I've been talking to David a lot through the years, and then especially through the Sledge Leather project. He was like our mentor. And then, I don't know, we just started talking. And one day he sends me an email, because the Sledge Leather thing really didn't take off. And again, it was just an indie thing. We did it, and we got to go to Europe and play some shows in L.A. And he said, hey, I have an idea of what you can do. It's funny. He obviously says it's to help your career, with your career. And I email him back and go, what career? Like, what are you talking about? So he said, I have some stuff written. Why don't you check it out? And I said, okay, I have some stuff written too. And then we just started sending it back and forth. And again, I said the same thing to him. This has to be right or we aren't going to do it. We just took our time, and it just really worked. So it, probably about a year ago. And it just happened. It just started happening. So.
Okay. So was this recorded in the time-tested Chastain manner with you out in California, Mike presumably in the Ohio area, and David back down in his home state of Georgia, if I'm not mistaken?
Exactly. And he and Steen is what we're seeing in Norway. I can just tell, yeah, we all recorded differently. And even, I never heard Steen's final drums, his drums before on the songs that we chose. His final tracks, excuse me, I'm downing my coffee, weren't what I heard. When I got into that studio to record my vocals and I heard his drums, I was floored. So I didn't even actually hear final cuts, final takes until I was in the studio. So that's how... I don't want to say scattered, but that's how bits and pieces it was.
Right.
And I, as a singer, I've obviously really fed off the drummer. So when I heard his tracks, I mean, to me, these songs just, it was set to me on fire. And I'm sure that I didn't hear the final guitar tracks either, because, you know, Chastain's always changing those. But yeah, it was done the same way, bits and pieces.
Since I have the digital version, I don't have all the details. How much did you contribute to the writing this time around?
I probably did about half of it. You know, he gave me credit for everything, which was really, really sweet. But, you know, I mean, he would send it to me, and he basically would let me do my thing, except there were a couple songs where Deep Down in the Darkness, which has become one of the favorites.
Right.
And I've said this in tons of interviews already. I didn't like that song. He sent it to me with another singer singing this melody that he liked and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no. And I kept doing all these things, and he'd be like, oh, Leather. He didn't like what I was doing, and I didn't like what he did with the other singer. So hence my ego again. I'm like, I don't really think it's working for me, blah, blah, blah. And then he said to me, you know, I wrote this a couple of years ago whenever, with you in mind. I was like, so anyway, it was, you know, I see argument. We don't argue. I'm like, I'm not doing the song. I'm not doing it. It's not working. So he says, okay, and we shelved it. And then, of course, when I go to record, he goes, why don't we just try this and see what happens? And, of course, I laid it down, and it's a good song. So, you know, like I said, we did a lot of going back and forth. And, again, me not being a prolific songwriter, I'm good. Just let me lay it down. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I have no problem with that at all. There's no ego with songwriting with me.
Right.
You know, I can write words for days, but I don't necessarily tend to record, like, you know, Pat Benatar melodies.
Right.
But Pat Benatar's melodies are good, so I'm saying it wrong. But, I mean, he would just go, what is that? Where did, what key is that, and where did it come from? And so he's really, really funny that way, but he allows me to be me. He certainly allowed me to be me on this record.
So I guess he's a real old-fashioned Southern gentleman, huh?
Yeah, oh, he really is. But it'd be so fun. Miss Leather, what key is that in?
Wow.
And I'd be like, you, yeah. So it's really fun.
Well, of all the classic metal reunions we've been seeing of late, this was definitely at the top of my list for Most Wanted. So thanks for putting
Thank
this one together
so much.
For so
That's
many
great,
years.
Gene.
So do you have anything you want to plug, any upcoming tour, or do you want to point the listeners to your website? Or
well,
Facebook?
I can tell you the only thing that I know about right now is that we will be playing probably a couple one-offs in the Ohio area. I know that Chastain's talking to promoters now, and I will get that out of him sometime in 2014. And again, depending on how well this record does, like I said, we're getting offers all the time, but another quote that I've discovered through this record, it takes a lot for Chastain to leave his castle. You know, he said, when the right show comes around, it's financially viable for all of us, we'll do it, but it's not really important to him.
Right.
So ChastainMetal.com for all the Chastain information. You can find my Facebook there. Please come and let me know what you think. So I just want everyone to enjoy the record, and I'm working on it, because like I said, I have a brand new suitcase. I'm packing it right now. But I'm just so glad to be back, and thank you. The welcome has been unbelievable. All of you people have been so generous. It's wonderful.
With that, Leather, I'd like to thank you again for joining me here on Third Eye Cinema once again. And I'd certainly love to have you back on to discuss your next album or project.
Cool. I have your personal number. I'll give you a call. Gene, thank you so much. You rock. I'll talk to you soon.
Listen to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Leather Leone of Chastain. Stay tuned for one more from Chastain after this.
Sledge Leather, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Turn it up and metal up. Wait, let me do that again. Wait, okay. Let me do it again. Okay, ready? Hey, Metalhead, this is Sandy Sledge from Sledge Leather, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Turn the radio up. Fuck. No, it's not a radio. Okay. What are they listening to? There's a computer.
So
okay, I got an idea. Okay, here we go. Hey, Metalheads, this is Sandy Sledge from Sledge Leather. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Crank it! Metal up! There you go.
Hi, this is Alex Staropoli from Rhapsody of Fire, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy!
This is Brian Lawrence from Dream Death, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, man, you got Chris from Widow, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema, the only cinema for real metal. I'm making up my own tagline, but you know.
Hey, this is Davey Vane from Vane. I want you to get very close to your speakers right now, right up against your speakers, because you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Gigi from Phantom Blue, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is James Murphy, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is Jason from Cauldron, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. That was pretty fucking clean, eh?
It was. First shot, and you got it down.
What's up, everybody? This is Mem from Exuma, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep it locked. The Thrash Dial.
Awesome. Hi, everybody out there. This is Micah Kiska speaking, singing for Unisonic in Plasma Dome, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Tony Portaro from Whiplash, and I want to thank Gene from Third Eye Cinema for keeping Whiplash alive.
Hi, this is Udo Doxano, singer of UDO, and you're listening to the show Third Eye Cinema.
And to close out our interview with Leather, here's another one off Surrender to No One, where she asks that you save her tonight.
Inside you.
joining us tonight. We hope you enjoy our interview with Lizzie Leone. In 2 weeks, Canada's favorite son, retro traditional shredder Jackie Slaughter of Skull Fist returns. In the future on Third Eye Cinema, Ron Keel, death metal virtuoso James Murphy, and the Indie Directors Roundtable. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. This or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. And next time...
Hey man, this is Jackie Slaughter from Skull Fist, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema! I just got way too excited. I just kept getting more and more. Couldn't help it, man. Oh, sorry. I can try it again if you want. Okay. Hey guys, man. This is Jackie Slaughter of Skull Fist, and I just wanted to tell you that you're listening to Third Eye Cinema, yeah!
It's you.
No, I mean, I just have this bipolar thing going on. I don't understand why I get so loud.
What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
Doing business like a CEO while saving like a CFO.
Staples has all the supplies you need to run your business like a boss at prices that'll make your bookkeeper smile.
Now that is an achievement.
Everything from markers and pens to 2019 desk calendars.
And right now, a 12-pack of Sharpie markers and an 8-pack of Expo dry erase markers are only $4.99 each.
At Staples, where there's a whole lot in store. Ends 1/19/19 in store only.